Okay, so there's something else, if we flick on to the next slide, please, while we're waiting. Sorry, on down. Thank you. That's the next thing is a Google slot. So 75 seconds to find out about Paul. It's pronounced Erdos, E-R-D-O-S. Okay, tell me as much as you can about him. Another good piece to go for, another good set of words is Erdos number. Bung those things in. Tell me about it quickly. Who was he? What did he do? What was special about him? Where was he born?
Hungary.
Hungary. Okay, so he came from Hungary. What did he do?
Maths.
Okay, what was special about him in his maths? He liked it. Yeah, he did. He did. He liked maths. Absolutely. Tell me more. Erdos number is probably a better place to get a quick synopsis of what he did. Where did he keep his property? In a suitcase. He lived his entire life out of a suitcase. Why did he do that? Because things didn't matter. What was important to him? Absolutely, math. So what did he do with his suitcase? What did he do with his suitcase? All his possessions in a suitcase. Pardon? He traveled. Yeah, and who did he go and visit?
Conferences.
He probably went to some conferences, but that wasn't what he spent most of his time doing. It was much worse than that. He did. He went and visited other mathematicians. And he'd pitch up on your doorstep, and then you'd do nothing but maths for 2 or 3 weeks while he stayed with you until he moved on to somebody else, okay? Right? So he's just completely fixated with maths. So did his mathematician mates love him or hate him?
Their wives hated him.
How do you think the mathematicians felt about him? How did they feel about this guy when he rang the doorbell? How do you think? Okay, so perhaps a bit Marmite-y. Maybe they loved it or they weren't quite sure. One thing happened. Their lives were not the same for that 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, okay? Somebody said as soon as he turned up on her doorstep, she had to cancel everything else she was going to do. But the thing was, they wrote the best papers they ever wrote when he was around. So when he pitched up, you wrote the best papers that you ever wrote. And he wrote more papers than any other mathematician in history. He wrote over 1,500 papers in his life. It's not surprising because it's the only thing he ever did. Okay, he got rid of everything else in his life in order to do maths. What's the Erdos number? What's that about? How connected you are. So what does that mean? Okay, so what sort of people had an Erdos number of one? That's right. The people that he went and visited, they got a number one because they wrote a paper with him. And then if they wrote a paper with somebody else, that person had an Erdos number of two and so forth, okay? So if you've written, so every mathematician will know what their number is, okay? And although I'm not a mathematician, I do have an Erdos number, okay? My number's four because I wrote a paper once with somebody who'd written a paper with somebody and so forth. And that's the way it works, okay? You all get a number. But I'd like you to bear that in mind, this crazy guy who lives out of a suitcase, never gets a driving license, never owns a car, never owns a house, And he did it in modern, it wasn't that long ago. When did he die? '96. Okay, so he lived in our world, okay, and he got rid of everything in order to do the one thing that he really wanted to. I think we've got a reading, is that right? Okay, John's going to read about somebody who gave up everything in order to get what he really wanted. If you're under 15 or whatever, under 12, you want to come to the front, under whatever, Paul's going to read, John's going to read and show you, sorry, John's going to read and show you the pictures. What's it called, John?
It's called The Precious Pearl.
The Precious Pearl. Do you want to grab a mic?
Okay, so apologies to the adults who can't see, but anyway, there's some nice pictures in the book. Jesus said, also, the kingdom of heaven is like this. A man is looking for fine pearls, and when he finds one that is unusually fine, he goes and sells everything he has and buys that pearl. It's in Matthew chapter 13. So here we have the precious pearl. Now, can you guys see the picture of a pearl there? Can you guys see a picture of a pearl there? No, what is it? It's a hat, right. Why is a hat there? So, here is a man who buys and sells things. He is called a merchant. He has a fine fur coat and a felt hat with a floppy feather. It's his favorite hat. The house he lives in is huge. I mean, we're talking huge. He has 5 floors and a fish pond. You got a fish pond? Fish ones. Okay, and it's got a fountain in the front garden. And the merchant has everything he wants. He has 15 rooms just filled with furniture. And, some of you might like this one, 4 freezers full of food. And 3 fridges just for fizzy drinks. You can see he's licking lips there. And there is more money under his mattress than you could ever imagine. Much more. Yes, the merchant has everything he wants until... Oh, dear. What's going to happen? One day, in a shop window, he sees something. Something special. It's a wonderful white pearl. Ooh, I like that. £500,000, says the man in the shop. Is that a lot of money? I don't know. Can't count that high. It is even more money than the merchant has under his mattress, but he wants that pearl more than anything else in the world. So, he hurries home. He has a plan. He sells his furniture, his fridges, and even his freezers full of food. He sells his house, his fountain, and even his fish pond. He sells his fine fur coat, but the felt hat with the floppy feathers he keeps, because, well, that's his favorite. And he borrows a barrow and bundles in the money, and off to the shop he trundles to buy the pearl. And, oh dear, he's still £6 short. Tell you what. Sell me your hat for £6, says the man in the shop. The merchant, he laughs, and he hands the man his hat, and he takes the pearl. Hooray! The pearl is his at last. And Jesus says, God is like the merchant's pearl. It costs everything to know him, but he is worth more than anything else in the world. The end.
So, Chris, can we have the next slide up, please? So, what's the story about? Story is about somebody who gives up everything. What's Jesus trying to get us to think about? Is he trying to tell us something about one great love? That in our hearts, in our minds, in our lives, really, we only have enough room for one great overarching love. And that's the story that these two little parables, side by side, we've thought about the one of the merchant. Anybody remember what the one immediately before it is? They both take just one verse to tell. What is the previous story? It's about a man who finds something in a field. He finds some treasure. He finds a chest of treasure. And what does he do? He's found it by accident. He doesn't own the field. And he goes, and the first thing he does, what does he do? The first thing he does when he found it? Pardon? He buries it again. He doesn't want anybody else to find it. He wants to make sure that he can have it. And then he goes and he trades everything he has in order to buy the field, because he knows once he's bought the field, he's got the treasure and he can pay off all the debts afterwards. And Jesus tells us that story, and that sort of makes sense. You know, he's quids in at the end of the deal. But this story makes less sense to us, doesn't it? Because he doesn't really get back in ways that we would expect to get back. He's traded all his life. He's traded pearls and other things back and forth. And he's got this opulent lifestyle. And he trades it away for just one pearl. I was reading a book that John told me I had to read, a book called Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes. And he lent me his copy. And I'm about 100 pages in. And while I was reading away yesterday, watching the swimming and sort of reading the book in between, he mentions something about two of the Beatitudes that help us to understand this one great love. Blessed are those, the person is really happy, says Jesus, who hungers and thirsts for righteousness. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And the chap had lived most of his life in the Middle East. He lived in Lebanon and other places. And he told about a time when he went out into the middle of the desert. He went on a convoy with a group of people, and one of their water containers leaked, and they lost all of that water. And he said by the time they made it to the oasis, they'd had to travel on for about a day without water. He said even swallowing was hard. He said his whole soul was taken up with wanting to get to that oasis and get some water. He said that's what Jesus says. If you really want something that badly, if you want God's righteousness that way, he said, actually, he said, you're not a sad person. He said, you will be happy because you will be satisfied. That's what he tells us in Luke. Blessed are the pure in heart, verse 8, for they will see God. And he said that thing about the pure in heart, it's about transparency. It's about having just WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. Somebody who has just one set of ideas. And our problem in life is that we want too many different things. We want a bit of righteousness. I'd like a bit of that. Don't you? Hunger and thirst after righteousness, like a good job, like my kids to do well, like people at work to think well of me, publish a few papers, bring in a few more grants maybe, new car maybe, car that's not too much trouble. All kinds of things, we just pile them on. When we're at school, you know, the kids that probably you need to pity most are the ones that are good at everything. They never get the chance to really focus on one thing. So maybe Jesus is telling us something about one great love. I don't know. Why do you think he told us the story? I'm going to do something else now, and then we'll come back to the story in a few minutes' time. One great love. Have you got room for one great love? Something hidden. There's something in this story about things being hidden. Hidden behind something. We don't know who that woman is, because she's got this sort of mask or something, some kind of a veil in front of her, and a black hat on, and she's wearing a black top, and there's not really very much to see about who she is. And there's something in these stories about things that are hidden, the treasure that's hidden in the field, the thing that people have to go and look for. Somehow it takes them some effort to get what they really want. I don't know whether you noticed John Wagg at the start of the service. What is it you do around at the top there, John? He has a count. But why do you have to walk around? You walk to that end, and then you walk to this end, and then what is it you're doing? Okay, so there are things that he can't see from where he's sitting that he wants to be able to see, and so he has to move to find them. And Jesus says sometimes you'll have to move to find what you really want. Sometimes it takes a lot of effort to get what you really, really want. When I was 12, my family, we moved on to a council estate. And one of my brothers, a couple of them, had a friend called Glyn. And Glyn's dad was quite a tough guy. And he worked on the production line at Longbridge, making British Leyland motor cars. And Glyn's dad was about the only guy that I know that printed his own paychecks. And he'd come in at the end of the week, and he'd give this paycheck to his wife. And I think it said something like £80. And every week he gave her a paycheck that said, "I've earned £80 this week." But Glyn's dad didn't earn £80 a week. He earned a little bit more than that. And so to get what he really wanted, he had to go to quite a lot of trouble to make sure that he could keep a certain amount to spend on what he really, really wanted. And what he really, really wanted was a steam organ. And he was the joint owner of a steam organ with the factory owner of one of the local factories. And he'd spend his weekends at these fairs, these steam fairs, and other things. What do you think happened when Glyn's mum found out about the paycheck stuff? Big row, absolutely massive row that you could hear for quite a long way around the estate. Big row. It didn't wreck the marriage. I think there might have been steamy weekends that might have wrecked the marriage, but that wasn't one of them. The organ, the steam organ, wasn't something that actually trashed the marriage in the end. But that's what he really wanted, and he went and he found it, and it took him some effort to be able to maintain his life as an owner of a steam organ. And Jesus said, actually, you may have to do a little bit of working. You may have to walk around a bit. It may take you some effort to find out what is really worthwhile. But, says Jesus, if you're hungry enough for it, if you're thirsty enough for it, you will be satisfied. Okay, last slide, please. So why did Jesus tell this story? What was Jesus thinking of when he told people about a person, a merchant, who went after pearls, who put his whole life into it, who's consumed by wanting the pearls and the greatest pearl of all? Well, Jesus was probably telling his disciples something about the importance of having one great love in their lives. Whether it's for freedom, to be honored and respected, the love of somebody else, all kinds of things that can come in and can be important to us. And Jesus knows how important it is to have one thing that overrules everything else. It makes it so much easier. We've been to too many funerals in the last couple of years, but one of them that we went to was the father of Danny's best friend at school. And they were bridesmaids to each other as they were growing up. And when we got married, Danny's friend was a bridesmaid, but her dad didn't come to the wedding because he was off at a steam rally somewhere. Okay, again, for him, there was one great love trumped everything else. You know, there's Danny, there's trains, and for him, it's an easy call. He was a professor, so he was really quite easy. He knew about what you really, really want to do. Something there, says Jesus, about really hungering, really thirsting, really wanting. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment." Matthew is still banging on about the same thing in chapter 2 that he was in chapter 5 and that he was in chapter 13. If you can love God with every fiber of your being, says Matthew, you will be happy, really, really happy. And the question is, how do we get to that stage? And we'll be thinking about some of the other parables and how Jesus wants to point us to a place where we can be really, really happy. Maybe it's because he wanted people to move around and to see things from a different perspective, to walk from that side, to look under and to walk over there and to see people that you couldn't see from the place you're sitting in. Maybe Jesus wants people to move around and see things a little bit hidden. They're not necessarily not obvious, but they can be very hidden. One of the saddest things about Paul Erdős, as far as I'm concerned, is that he never saw the God behind any of the patterns, fabulously alert to all of those patterns that the numbers gave him, and yet completely closed to any idea of God, except that he had a name for God. He called God the Supreme Fascist. That was his word for God. SF, he called him as a shorthand. And it's funny that you should make a name for somebody you don't believe in. That's a strange sort of a thing. And it's sad that he never sees beyond that. Enjoys the numbers, the man who loved only numbers. But something else was hidden from him. And Jesus said, actually, that's why I talk in parables. Because I want the people that really want to know to get something out of them. The people that really want to think about them to get something out of them. The kingdom of heaven, said Jesus, is like. What is it that Jesus is saying? Is Jesus saying, in order to get what you really want, like the Tunisian Christians, you may have to sacrifice everything? It's hard to open your papers these days without seeing some atrocity against Christians in some part of the world. I just opened the paper yesterday, 100 Christian families kidnapped by ISIS. It's happening. People are giving up everything in order to have the one thing that they really, really want. And maybe Jesus is saying that you are supposed to be, that I'm supposed to be like the pearl merchant, that to get that one thing, to get Jesus in our lives, to get that love of God, we have to pursue it single-mindedly, transparently, wholeheartedly, with every fiber of our being. The thing about parables is they flip around, and sometimes they can mean almost the opposite of what we thought they first meant. And maybe Jesus is saying something completely different. Maybe he's saying, actually, I'm the pearl merchant, and I have gone after humanity, and I wanted that more than anything else, and I will give up whatever it takes to get it. And a few chapters later, we find out how much it cost him to get that humanity. The kingdom of heaven, said Jesus, is like a merchant seeking fine pearls. I'll leave it to you this week to find out what the real pearls are for you and to pursue them together. Thanks very much indeed, Helen.